tuning out. It's impossible to do while listening to Life Matters, but very easy in a university lecture theatre. Your lecturers at the front, reading their notes to the class, and you're a million miles away, doodling, or practising your autograph. Is this your fault for being so slack, or the lecturer's fault for being so dull? My next guest says, more often than not, it's the lecturer, and he's one himself. Professor Eric Mazur is the Bolkonski, I knew I was going to get that wrong, Bolkonski Professor of Physics and Applied Physics at Harvard. He thought he was a good teacher, until he discovered his students were just memorising the information rather than learning it, understanding it properly. So he changed what he does, and he joins me now. Welcome to Life Matters.
Thank you.
When did you first realise that your students were just rote learning?
Oh, that was quite a discovery after teaching, something like 6 or 7 years at Harvard and fooling myself to believe I was a good lecturer. I discovered it basically by asking the students very simple questions and discovering that they were unable to answer these simple questions, even though they could regurgitate everything that I had told them.
So they could tell you what you'd told them, but they couldn't think. They couldn't connect the dots.
They couldn't connect it to the real world. For example, let me give you an example. I asked them. So every student in an introductory physics course can recite Newton's third law, which you may have heard of. It's action is reaction.
Yeah.
The force of A on B is equal in magnitude to the force of B on A. But if you take that into a daily life context and you ask them, what is the force that a car exerts on a truck, or how does it compare to the force that a truck exerts on a car when the two collide head-on on the highway, they have no clue how to answer that. In fact, I had one student ask me when I asked that question, Professor Mazur, how should I answer that question? According to what you taught me or according to the way I usually think about these things?
Right. I'm intrigued because this is at Harvard. You don't get into Harvard by being stupid. It only takes very bright kids.
Absolutely. It's a very selective admissions process. But I think it's a problem that is pervasive in education everywhere. You know, for thousands of years, education has focused on transferring information. And I think until probably about 100 years ago, this was the only way to educate the next generation. But if you ask yourself, what is education? It's much more than just a transfer of information. You need to assimilate that information. Mm. You need to connect it to what you already know. You need to be able to take that information and apply it to things you do not know yet. And if you ask yourself which of the two parts, the getting the information or the gathering of the information and the assimilation of it, which of those two is the hardest, I think we'd all agree it's the assimilation. Yet the standard lecture gives not even an opportunity to assimilate that information. It's basically note-taking.
Yes. Yeah, I'm just thinking back to I did cell and molecular biology and zoology at university, and I certainly never had an original thought. I just told them what they told me.
I once heard somebody describe the lecture method as a process whereby the lecture notes of the instructor get transferred to the notebooks of the students without passing through the brains of either.
Well, it was certainly true at my end.
Yes.
Now, you followed that idea with the introduction of peer instruction to your lectures. Now, how does that work?
So, basically, I decided that I would take the information transfer, which is the easy part, certainly now in the information age, out of the classroom. So, my students have to read my lecture notes before they come to class. And I enforce that by asking them a series of questions that they have to answer online the day before class.
Mm-hmm.
And then in class, what I do, rather than lecturing, is that I take... So basically, one of the questions that I ask them before they come to class is, what did you find difficult in the reading? So the night before class, I can press on a button and see the points that the students found difficult in their reading. So the next day, when I step in class, I have in front of me a list of questions that they have. And rather than telling them, well, these were your questions, this is how it is, I basically bounce the question back at them. So I'll talk maybe a few minutes, and then I project the first question. And rather than telling them what the answer is to that question, I give them about a minute or so to think about it, to reflect on the question. And then they answer the question. Usually I try to cast it in a multiple choice format so that I can either by show of hands or with flashcards or nowadays we use technology clickers, I can have them answer that question. And then, and this was sort of serendipitous, a serendipitous discovery in my class, I'll tell you more about that in a second, I tell them, now turn to your neighbor and try to convince your neighbor of your answer. Complete chaos in a classroom.
I'll bet.
Impossible to doze off because, you know, your neighbor starts talking to you. And what happens in the 2 or so minutes that I give them to discuss is that the students who understand the material effectively convince those who don't. In fact, they do it better than I could because they have only recently understood the material. So they still have some feeling for what a beginning learner, for the conceptual difficulties that a beginning learner has. Whereas Professor Mazur in front of the class, he learned it such a long time ago, he can't even understand anymore what cannot be understood about the subject. So you find that if you pitch the question right, and right means about half the students get it right, within 2 minutes, the class, you know, completely convinces one another of the correct answer.
On Life Matters, if you've just joined us, my guest is Professor Eric Mazur, who's the Bolkansky Professor of Physics and Applied Physics at Harvard University. And we're talking really about a new way, well, a way of teaching, engaging a lecture room full of university students in a way that was certainly very different to what I went through. It actually requires university students to think. I can hear a kind of collective groan from some students who are now being asked to actually engage in their classes. Have you had any resistance?
Oh, absolutely. You know, before when I taught, when I lectured, I gave out copies of my lecture notes to my students would accuse me of lecturing for my lecture notes. Well, I never get that complaint anymore because I basically don't lecture. Now the complaint is, Professor Mazur is not teaching us anything. We have to learn it all ourselves. But I think that's fine. I mean, I think that's true in anything, right? You don't become a piano player by listening to others play the piano. You don't train for a marathon by sitting on the couch eating popcorn, watching DVDs of marathon runners.
No.
You have to do the running. Same thing with any field, any discipline in a lecture. In order to really learn the discipline, you have to practice the discipline.
Have you any evidence to show this method works, that it leads to better grades?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I try to be very rigorous about that. What got me to do this was data that showed that my students did not understand the underlying concepts in a physics course, even though they were able to pass the exam by basically plugging and chugging. Now, when I use the same assessment instruments that I used way back when to show me that the students did not understand, I see significant gains, factors of 2 and 3. We're not talking about 10, 20%. No, we're talking about factors of 2 or 3. So very significant improvements.
I'm just thinking it's more than 20 years since I left university, but I can still remember the most entertaining lecturers. Does your approach mean the death of performance in the lecture theatre?
Yes, in a sense it does, and that's what I miss the most. So that's why I'm happy when other universities like ANU here in Canberra now invites me to lecture. I get to make up for that a little bit. But there's certainly an element of that. You don't have the star lecturer performer anymore. Now, that is not to say that I don't lecture at all. I'll talk for maybe 5-10 minutes, have a question, the interaction in the class. I'll talk for another few minutes. So there's still a little bit of lecturing left.
Mm.
But it's not an hour and a half of continuous lecturing.
I suppose the thing is, you can have a lecturer who's a tremendous performer who still isn't requiring, you know, the students sitting in the lecture hall to actually think. They're just watching the lecturer and taking notes.
And that's what happened in my class for something like 6-7 years before I discovered that it was not, even though I got very high marks for my lecturing, and even though the students did well on the exams I gave them, it was not leading to any long-lasting understanding.
You use this method in the teaching of physics, But can this be used in other disciplines? What about the humanities?
Well, I'm, of course, not a humanist, so I don't know too much about the teaching, but I've been traveling all around the world talking about my instructional technique, and I've been at a number of places where people from the humanities have come to me, from French drama classes to English literature classes, saying that they use similar types of engagement. And I can imagine if you teach, let's say, Shakespeare, you wouldn't lecture by reading the play of Shakespeare that you're covering that day to the students. In essence, that's what we do in physics. We read in many classes, we read the book to the students. So you require the students to read the play or the piece before coming to class, and you discuss it in class. So I think any discipline that requires any thinking, which is really any discipline, lends itself to this approach.
It's clearly more work for the students. It must be more work for you too.
Well, it's a different work. Rather than preparing an elaborate lecture and sort of choreographing every minute of my time with the students, what I do is I go over the difficulties and I try to address their individual needs. For the students, yes, it is more work to have to read the book before coming to class, but I tell them, look, you have to read it anyway. You can read it before class to prepare yourself for class. You can read it after class to understand what happened in class, or you can read it 2 weeks before the exam in order to just, you know, try to pass the exam. It's going to cost you the same amount of time. So I think it spreads out the work for the students more than pushing it all to, you know, the end of the semester where they have to cram the information in order to pass the exam. So I think the amount of extra work for them is not that much. But of course they learn a lot more.
Yes.
They become more successful students.
Thank you very much for joining us today, Eric.
My pleasure.
Eric Mazur's Balkansky, Professor of Physics and Applied Physics at Harvard. And if you're in Canberra, he's already mentioned this, you can see Eric presenting these ideas in a paper, Confessions of a Converted Lecturer. It's at 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon at the Robertson Lecture Theatre at the ANU. And naturally, there will be a test afterwards. This is Life Matters on ABC Radio National.